New tonight. Now the U.S. government says it will close the Metropolitan Correctional Center in Lower Manhattan where Jeffrey Epstein committed suicide 2 years ago. The Federal Bureau of Prisons says the federal prison is closing. Not long ago, drug kingpin El Chapo spilled some tea about this den he used to call home. Apparently, it's not a tropical resort with 5-star reviews, it's more like a torture chamber. And guess what other high-profile name also found himself in the music in this symphony of suffering? None other than Jeffrey Epstein. In this video, we'll uncover the truth behind the MCC and Jeffrey Epstein's time in this prison system, the Metropolitan Correctional Center. It's no secret that Jeffrey Epstein was incarcerated at the MCC prior to his death. This federal penitentiary located in the heart of Lower Manhattan has a long and notorious history of inhumane treatment that has remained hidden from the public for decades. There were even revelations made by Joaquin El Chapo Guzman that the MCC was a place of torture. In fact, high-profile figures like mob boss John Gotti have long complained about the conditions within its walls. Let's start by going back to 1991, when lawyers for John Gotti, also known as the Dapper Don, raised concerns about the inhumane conditions at the MCC. They requested that Gotti be transferred, citing the need for improved treatment and living conditions. This was just the beginning of a long history of complaints that would follow. Jan Theo Harris, a political science professor at Brooklyn College, describes the conditions as a hidden gulag in the middle of Lower Manhattan. If I were to describe these conditions to you, you'd be forgiven for thinking they were a rock. Ahmed Khalfan Gaylani, convicted of his role in the 1998 bombings of 2 U.S. embassies in Africa, reportedly preferred being held at the U.S. military base in Guantanamo Bay, Cuba, to MCC. This startling revelation speaks volumes to the severity of the conditions facing MCC prisoners. Guantanamo Bay, a place associated with controversy and human rights issues, was considered more pleasant and relaxed than MCC. The problems at MCC extend beyond the prisoners. A report in the Chief Leader, the newspaper of New York City's civil service, revealed that the facility is struggling with staffing issues. Staff members are forced to work 3 or 4 double shifts a week due to staffing shortages. This not only places a burden on staff members but also exacerbates the already difficult conditions faced by prisoners. It's a situation that raises serious questions about MCC's ability to provide a safe and humane environment for those held within its walls. MSI was established in 1975 as a pretrial detention center to house individuals awaiting trial on charges in the Southern District of New York. Since its inception, MCC was intended as a temporary holding facility, but over the years it has transformed into a grim and overcrowded prison. Conditions at MSC vary greatly depending on where inmates are held. General population, the special housing unit, and the infamous 10 South Wing each have their own set of challenges and horrors. Most inmates are initially housed in general population. Here, they face issues such as inadequate temperature regulation, poor medical care, and a constant struggle for personal space in overcrowded cells. But it is in SHU and 10 South that the true horrors of CISM come to light. SHU is reserved for individuals deemed unsafe in general population or those who have allegedly violated prison rules. Solitary confinement is the norm here, with prisoners spending most of their time alone in their cells. However, it is the infamous A10 South that has garnered the most attention and condemnation. Over the past 2 decades, this wing has primarily housed individuals accused of terrorism and high-profile criminals. The conditions in the 10 South Wing are beyond comprehension. Prisoners in 10 South are not allowed any outdoor recreation, and the windows are frosted, depriving them of natural air and light. The lack of ventilation combined with the filth and vermin infestation creates an environment that is nothing short of a living nightmare. The lack of natural light further compounds the psychological impact of the conditions in the MCC. Days stretch into weeks and weeks into months without a glimpse of sunlight. This deprivation not only disrupts the prisoners' circadian rhythms, but also deprives them of the basic human need for exposure to natural light. Studies have shown that sunlight plays a crucial role in regulating mood and promoting mental well-being. Without it, prisoners are left in a perpetual state of darkness, both physically and metaphorically. The absurd rules imposed on prisoners at CSM further strip them of their sense of autonomy and dignity. Not allowing them to see newspapers unless they are 30 days old is a deliberate attempt to keep them disconnected from the outside world. This isolation and lack of access to up-to-date information contribute to a sense of powerlessness and further erode their mental well-being. The secrecy surrounding conditions at CSM, where lawyers can be punished for describing their clients' experiences, creates an atmosphere of fear and intimidation. Prisoners feel voiceless and trapped in a system that seems designed to break their spirit. The impact of these inhumane conditions is not limited to the prisoners themselves. Families and loved ones also suffer as they witness the mental and physical deterioration of their loved ones. The emotional toll of watching a family member suffer such harsh treatment is immeasurable. CISM becomes a source of anguish and despair for those on the outside, who feel helpless and unable to provide the support and care their loved ones desperately need. Inmates at 10 southern prisons spend most of their time alone in their cells, and even basic human interaction is severely limited. They shower in their cells and are electronically monitored at all times, leaving them with no privacy or escape from constant surveillance. The isolation and lack of human contact takes a toll on the mental health of those held at 10 southern prisons. Attorneys and advocates have reported that their clients' mental health is deteriorating rapidly, making it difficult for them to make rational decisions regarding their trials. To make matters worse, prisoners at 10 South are subject to special administrative measures imposed by the Attorney General. These measures severely restrict their communication with the outside world, leaving them isolated and cut off from any support systems they may have. The combination of these factors creates an environment that is not only dehumanizing, but also a breeding ground for despair and hopelessness. It is no wonder that suicide rates at MCCs are alarmingly high. The shocking reality is that the horrors of MCC have existed for decades, hidden in plain sight. Journalists, activists, and concerned citizens have long sought to draw attention to the inhumane conditions within these walls, but their pleas fell on deaf ears. It is no secret that the Department of Justice, including former U.S. Attorney General William Barr, were fully aware of the conditions at MCC. Yet they chose to turn a blind eye, allowing the inhumane treatment of prisoners to continue unchecked. The scandal surrounding Jeffrey Epstein's death has put the MCC in the spotlight, prompting the Barr to call for an investigation into the serious irregularities. But let's not be fooled by this sudden show of concern. The irregularities were not a surprise to the government. They were a well-known fact. The truth is that the MCC has been engineering these irregularities for years. U.S. Attorney Jeffrey Berman, Barr's predecessor Prit Bharara, and the judges of the Southern District of New York were aware of the deplorable conditions at MCC. The federal prison system itself is riddled with similar problems. So why did they choose to tolerate these conditions? Why did they allow abuse and corruption to persist? The answer lies in the government's relentless claims of national security and necessity. By invoking the necessity of national security, the government has successfully justified the inhumane treatment of MCC prisoners. They have convinced the judges and the public that these conditions are necessary to protect society from suspected criminals. But let's not forget that the people held at MCC are still awaiting trial. They are presumed innocent before the law and their punishment should not begin until after their conviction. Yet they are subjected to filth, vermin, and isolation. All in the name of national security. The government's claims of necessity and national security are nothing more than a smokescreen designed to obscure the truth about MCC's systemic failures. They have created a culture of impunity in which those responsible for the well-being of prisoners face no consequences for their actions. The lack of accountability extends beyond MCC itself. Major news organizations have also failed to press the issue, preferring to focus on sensationalized stories about high-profile criminals rather than prison conditions. Perhaps it is the paradox of a high-rise dungeon in Manhattan's financial district that makes it hard for people to believe the horrors that exist at MCC. Descriptions of a filthy, decrepit, and vermin-infested prison seem too far-fetched to be true. But the horrors of MCC are well documented. Journalist Aviva Stahl's reporting exposed the filth, overflowing sewage, poor medical care, harrowing isolation, and often indifferent and cruel staff at MCC. Lawyers, prisoners, academics, and human rights organizations have contributed to the mounting evidence of the abusive and corrupt conditions at MCC. Administrative challenges, legal motions, and investigations have been filed to document the problems prisoners face. Yet despite this overwhelming evidence, the public and the government have chosen to look the other way. There is a tendency to ignore the suffering of incarcerated individuals, particularly those who come to light. These prison conditions make Jeffrey Epstein's death controversial. Death conspiracies. Jeffrey Epstein died on August 10, 2019, while awaiting trial. People have different ideas about how he died. Was it suicide, murder, or something else mysterious? Let's take a look at the theories and puzzling details. The official explanation is that he committed suicide by hanging himself in his cell at the Metropolitan Correctional Center in New York City. But many people don't believe it and question the official version. Many people are perplexed about how Jeffrey Epstein, who is supposed to be under close surveillance to prevent him from harming himself, was able to take his own life while awaiting trial. Suicide watch is a safety measure for people at risk that involves constant supervision and extra security. Epstein's ability to self-harm while on such watch raises serious questions about the effectiveness of the prison system. The situation becomes even more suspicious when we learn that the guards tasked with monitoring Epstein were apparently asleep and failed to follow required checks in his cell. This negligence is concerning and has led to speculation about possible foul play. The guards are accused of falsifying logs to make it appear that they were regularly checking on the situation when in fact they were not. This intentional deception raises serious questions about the official story and fuels the growing belief that there may be more to Epstein's death than we have been told. The autopsy results have also led to skepticism about how Epstein died. Dr. Michael Baden, a prominent forensic pathologist hired by Epstein's brother to investigate, presents compelling evidence that Epstein's injuries are not consistent with what would be expected from a typical suicide by hanging. Dr. Baden, with his extensive experience, noticed something unusual about Epstein's injuries. Typically, in cases of hanging, a small bone in the neck called the iodine bone is broken. But in Epstein's case, not only was the iodine bone broken, but other bones in his neck were also broken. This is unusual and suggests a different cause of death. Dr. Baden noted that Epstein's injuries are more similar to those in strangulation cases, where external pressure on the neck can cause bone fractures and other signs of trauma. These findings suggest a troubling possibility. Epstein may have been murdered rather than taking his own life. One idea is that Jeffrey Epstein did not die alone, but rather had help ending his own life, possibly because he could not bear the consequences of his crimes and was facing a lengthy prison sentence. This theory raises the question of who may have helped him and why. There are also bizarre conspiracy theories involving the Clinton family, suggesting that they somehow played a role in Epstein's death. Some believe that the Clintons planned Epstein's death to protect their reputations and prevent damaging information from being revealed. Others believe that Epstein had damaging evidence against the Clintons, suggesting that they were involved in his illegal activities. This theory proposes that Epstein's death was a deliberate plan to keep him silent and protect the Clintons from potential legal trouble. Epstein's situation becomes more interesting because Zelda's partner when he died was Nicholas Tartaglione, a big guy who used to be a cop and was accused of murder. It's strange because they seem like an unlikely pairing. Some people think Tartaglione could have played a role in Epstein's death, perhaps as an assistant or to keep him quiet. Now consider Epstein's private island in the Caribbean called Little St. James Island. He's said to have done illegal things with underage girls there. The island is mysterious. There's talk of secret tunnels and hidden rooms. There's a mysterious blue-striped building in a leafy area that draws attention. It looks like a temple with a gold dome, leading to many theories. Some think it's a music room for a pianist, while others believe it hides an elevator that leads to a secret underground location. To help unravel the mystery, a contractor who worked there shared his ideas. He doubted the elevator theory, but he noticed something strange at the entrance to the temple. Instead of a lock on the inside to prevent entry, there is a large locking bar on the outside, suggesting that it is designed to lock people inside. Why did Epstein go to such lengths to secure it, potentially trapping people inside? These questions make the island and its owner all the more intriguing. The temple symbolizes hidden secrets waiting to be discovered within its walls. Epstein was known for his love of treasure hunting. He would reward his employees handsomely if they found something valuable on the island, offering anywhere from a few dollars to $1,000 depending on the value of the item. His employees became avid treasure hunters. They would explore every nook and cranny, finding ancient artifacts like rum bottles and plates left behind by previous inhabitants. These artifacts from the past fascinated Epstein. Why did Epstein enjoy treasure hunting? Some believe it was a way for him to escape his life of crime, a temporary break to enjoy a more innocent activity. Others say he saw himself as a modern-day pirate, seeking wealth and power through illegal means. Regardless of why he did it, his interest in treasure hunting added further mystery to the island's history. It portrayed Epstein as someone eager for adventure and eager to uncover secrets from the past. Some believe Epstein may have used these secret locations to escape and fake his own death. They wonder if he could have faked his death by replacing his body with someone else's. Epstein had the resources to pull off such a plan. There have even been claims that he has been seen alive after his supposed death, such as drone footage showing a lookalike on his private island. While these sightings are unproven, they contribute to conspiracy theories about what really happened to Epstein. Some people believe Jeffrey Epstein may have had connections to the Mossad, the Israeli intelligence agency. They believe he may have been working as a spy, using his friendships and power to gather secrets about important people. This idea posits that Epstein's death may have been faked to preserve those connections and allow him to continue his undercover work. His crimes in the annals of true crime, few cases have captured the public's attention like that of Jeffrey Epstein. The story begins with a man who appears to be a wealthy financier, hobnobbing with the elite and the powerful. But beneath the facade of wealth and influence lurked a dark secret that would eventually come to light. It all began in the early 2000s, when allegations of sexual misconduct against Epstein began to surface. Rumors of his heinous crimes first reached law enforcement, and an investigation into his activities began. The FBI, in particular, became keenly interested in uncovering the truth behind a man who appeared to have a web of powerful connections. As the investigation progressed, a disturbing pattern emerged. Epstein was accused of luring underage girls to his lavish properties, promising them money, fame, and a better life. But instead of delivering on these promises, he subjected them to unspeakable acts of sexual abuse and exploitation. Vulnerable and impressionable victims were caught in a web of manipulation and fear. As the evidence against Epstein mounted, it became clear that this was no isolated incident. The scope of his crimes was vast, and his victims came from all walks of life. From aspiring models to struggling students, Epstein preyed on the most vulnerable, using his wealth and power to silence them. In 2005, the initial criminal case against Epstein took shape. The Palm Beach Police Department launched a comprehensive investigation into the allegations and uncovered a network of victims who had been subjected to Epstein's depravity. The testimonies were harrowing and painted a picture of a man who had no regard for the innocence or well-being of others. But as the case gained momentum, Epstein's legal team fought tooth and nail to protect their client. They employed every tactic under their belt, questioning the credibility of victims and exploiting legal loopholes. Epstein, with his vast resources, seemed untouchable. However, the determination of law enforcement and the bravery of the victims could not be silenced. In 2008, the case took a dramatic turn when Epstein reached a controversial non-prosecution agreement with the U.S. Attorney's Office. This agreement, which would later come under intense scrutiny, allowed Epstein to plead guilty to lesser charges and avoid federal prosecution. The non-prosecution agreement was a blow to the victims and a stain on the justice system. It seemed as if Epstein had managed to escape the consequences of his actions yet again. Despite the non-prosecution agreement, the public outcry and the victims' determination continued to grow. The case against Epstein became a symbol of the injustices that can occur when power and privilege are allowed to prevail. Survivors, fueled by their desire for justice, refused to be silenced. In 2019, the case took a dramatic turn when federal prosecutors in New York filed new charges against Epstein. This time, there would be no plea deal and no escape from the consequences of his actions. The evidence against him was overwhelming, and survivors were ready to face their abuser in court. As the trial unfolded, the world watched with bated breath. The courtroom became a battleground as survivors bravely recounted their experiences and confronted Epstein face to face. Their testimonies were compelling, offering a vivid picture of the trauma they had endured and the lasting impact it had on their lives. The prosecution presented a mountain of evidence meticulously assembled over years of investigation. Flight logs, witness statements, and financial records pointed to a man who had built a vast network of exploitation and abuse. The true extent of Epstein's crimes were finally being laid bare for all to see. In July 2019, the jury returned its verdict, finding him guilty on charges of sex trafficking of minors. It was a moment of triumph for survivors, a validation of their bravery and resilience. Once thought untouchable, Epstein was now facing the consequences of his actions. But before justice could be served, tragedy struck. Just weeks after his conviction, Epstein was found dead in his jail cell. The circumstances surrounding his death continue to be shrouded in controversy and speculation. Some believe it was suicide, while others suspect foul play. Regardless of the cause, Epstein's death left many unanswered questions and a sense of unfulfilled justice. While Epstein may have been spared a lengthy prison sentence, his passing has not erased the impact of his crimes. Emboldened by their courtroom victory, survivors continue to fight for justice and to shed light on the vast network of individuals who enabled Epstein's activities. In the wake of Epstein's death, the spotlight has shifted to his associates and enablers. Ghislaine Maxwell, Epstein's close confidant, was arrested and charged with multiple crimes, including conspiracy to entice minors to engage in sexual and lawful activity. One of the most high-profile civil cases was filed in January 2020 by a woman known as Jane Doe in her lawsuit. She alleged that Epstein and his associate Ghislaine Maxwell recruited and sexually abused her when she was just a 13-year-old music student back in 1994. According to the lawsuit, the abuse continued over a harrowing 4-year period during which Maxwell played a key role in her recruitment and participated in the assaults. The lawsuit sought justice for the victim and wanted both Epstein and Maxwell to be held accountable for their actions. But Jane Doe wasn't the only one seeking justice. In August 2020, 9 other Jane Does came forward, filing a class action lawsuit against Epstein's estate. The alleged victims included an 11-year-old girl and a 13-year-old girl, and their stories highlighted the horrifying extent of Epstein's depravity. Additionally, one victim claimed the abuse dated back to 1975, revealing the long-term nature of Epstein's criminal activities. Another Jane Doe filed a separate lawsuit against Epstein in August 2020, accusing him of sexually abusing her for over a year, beginning when she was 18. In March 2021, a woman from Broward County, Florida, filed a civil lawsuit against Epstein's estate. She accused Epstein and Maxwell of repeatedly trafficking and raping her in 2008. Her lawsuit sought not only justice for her, but also accountability. Accountability for those who facilitated and participated in his abuse. Civil cases against Epstein and his associates have shed light on the extent of his criminal activities. They have provided a platform for survivors to share their stories, seek justice, and hold those responsible accountable. These cases have also exposed the vast network of individuals who enabled Epstein's actions, raising questions about the collaboration of the powerful and influential. In addition to the civil cases, the U.S. government has taken action against entities connected to Epstein. In 2022, the government sued J.P. Morgan Chase Bank, alleging that the bank facilitated and concealed Epstein's human trafficking ring. A serious lawsuit is underway against Jamie Dimon, the CEO of J.P. Morgan Chase. The allegation is that Dimon may have had knowledge of Epstein's illegal activities and may have assisted him through the bank. This information emerged during a court case in the Virgin Islands, where J.P. Morgan was accused of aiding Epstein's illegal activities for more than 10 years. At one hearing, it was mentioned that emails suggesting Epstein's money transfers were awaiting Dimon's approval. These emails are significant because of their timeline. They were sent in August 2008, just months after Epstein pleaded guilty in Florida to unlawful activity with a minor. This was Epstein's first legal trouble that led to him being labeled a sex offender. The concern is that Jamie Dimon, who was allegedly reviewing Epstein's account at the time, could have known about Epstein's crimes, raising questions about what Dimon knew and whether he was involved now. Dimon is under increased scrutiny because the government of the Virgin Islands is investigating him. They have the authority to investigate what he knew and when. This investigation comes at a crucial time for J.P. Morgan. The bank recently accused one of its former executives, Jess Staley, of any wrongdoing related to Epstein in a legal filing. Staley, who later became CEO of Barclays, resigned over his connections to Epstein. During the hearing, the Virgin Islands attorney questioned why only Staley was being charged and not Dimon, the CEO. This suggests that high-level officials at the bank, including Dimon, may have known about Epstein's activities. J.P. Morgan denied Dimon's involvement, stating that it did not handle Epstein's accounts during that time. However, a federal judge disagreed, allowing the government to investigate Dimon further. This suggests that the allegations against Dimon may have some merit despite the bank's denials. While the current case against J.P. Morgan and Dimon is a civil matter, it's important to remember that criminal charges sometimes arise from information revealed in civil lawsuits. The Epstein case began with investigative journalism and civil lawsuits before eventually leading to criminal charges. It remains to be seen whether a similar pattern plays out in this situation. In the wake of Epstein's crimes, there has been increased awareness of the vulnerabilities that allow this type of exploitation to occur. Efforts are underway to strengthen laws, improve victim support services, and increase education and awareness about the signs of abuse. The media has played a crucial role in exposing Epstein's crimes and keeping the public informed. Journalists and documentary filmmakers have worked tirelessly to uncover the truth, amplifying the voices of survivors and shedding light on the systemic failures that allowed Epstein to act with impunity for so long. If you enjoyed this video, click the card that appears on your screen right now to watch more videos. M.